Okay, welcome, Kites, Kedushin Chabura. We are up to Mem Dalal Mabez towards the bottom, five lines from the bottom, starting with the word Masiv Rav Kahana. And Be'ezr Hashem, we're going to be going into Mem Hey Amad Aleph and doing the first half of Mem Hey Amad Aleph up until the two dots. So if you recall from last recording, we were discussing the capacity for a Ketana to accept Kesef Kedushin from a Chassan without the consent of her father. In general, we say that a father has the schus, the right to mekadesh his daughter and to accept kiddushin on her behalf. But lo and behold, this ketana went ahead and she accepted kesef kiddushin without the das of her father. Does it have any legal standing in halacha? So we saw Rav and Shmuel held that we are mesupak as to whether or not the father gave his consent when he heard about it. Obviously, if he protested, it would not be in effect. But if he's quiet and we're not sure, we are mesupak. And so therefore, Rav and Shmuel required a get and a mian for reasons we explained in the last year. But Ula is the shita we're going to focus in on today. Ula, at the end of last year, said that no, once a ketana is mekabel kesef kedushin from a chassan, it has no legal standing in halacha. It is null and void. There is no requirement for a get. There's no requirement for a mian. Nothing happened. There was no das of the father to accept the kesef kedushin, and therefore it's a meaningless act of kedushin. The Gemara now is going to bring a braisa, a mishnah, and a braisa, two kashas on Ula, which demonstrate that we have a case, one in the Mishnah and one in a Braisa, that seemingly imply that a Ketana is able to accept Kedushin from a Chassan without the consent of her father, and it has some legal standing. And the Gemara is going to deflect both of these questions by giving an Okimta and showing that this Mishnah and this Braisa is talking about a specific situation, and you can't bring a Kasha on Ula. That's the agenda of today. That's going to be the format of the Gemara. Two kashas, one from a Mishnah, one from a Braisa, but each one is a little bit involved, and we need a little bit of a background for each to understand each Mishnah in order to ask the kasha on Ula. So let's begin with the first one. Masiv Rav Kahana, five lines from the bottom on Mem Dalal Amud Beis. Fourth word on the line is Masiv. Masiv Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana challenged Ula from the following Mishnah. V'kulan im mesu. O mianu o nizgarshu. If any one of these wives die, or mianu, or they perform a mian, or they are divorced, or they're found shenimtzu ayalonis, or they're found to be an ayalonis, they're found to have some kind of male characteristics that make them clearly not able to have children, tsarosehen, their tsaros, their co-wives, are mutaros, are mutter. Now, what is this Mishnah talking about? So let's give a little bit of a background to this Mishnah, and then we'll read it again. So we know, in general, that when it comes to Yibam, when Reuven is married, let's say, to Leah, if Reuven is nifter without any children, so Leah, the widow, is now not automatically released to do whatever she wants to do and marry someone else. She is now a Yivama to the brother of Reuven, to Shimon. So she has a zika, she has an attachment, she's mechuyev in yibum to Shimon. So she can either do yibum to Shimon, or there's a process called chalitza. Yibum or chalitza has to be done in order to release Leah from any chiyuvim. She can't just go marry someone else. Okay? And the truth is, if Reuven happened to have married two wives, Leah and Rachel, again, we say the same thing, that when Reuven dies childless, not only is Leah a potential Yevama to Shimon, but also her co-wife, which is called a Tzara. Her co-wife, Rachel, is also a potential Yevama to Shimon. This is the halacha, a standard halacha of Yibam. Now, step two, there is an exception to the rule of Yibam. And that's referred to as the 15 Arayas, the Tesvav Arayas, that if for some reason Reuven married Leah, and Shimon, the brother of Reuven, is one of the Arayas to Leah, then Yibum does not go into effect. The Nefilas Yibum, when Yibum takes effect, it can't be between one of the Isurei Arayas. And therefore, Leah would be off the hook. Legamrei, she'd be putter from Yibam, no chalitza, no Yibam necessary. Her husband died, she's not chayv in Yibam, nor chalitza, because the Yavama, the Yavam, Shimon, is an arayas, one of the arayas to Leah. So what will be a typical example? A daughter. Reuven, let's say, marries Leah, his niece. You're a midaraisa, an uncle is allowed to marry his niece. Okay? So he marries Leah, who is now Shimon's daughter. So lo and behold, Reuven dies, childless. Shimon now, the brother, is now the Yavam, but his Yibam is to Leah, his own daughter. Now that's obviously an Isidoraisa with Kares, and there is no Yibam in effect. Step 3. Not only does Arias potter up Yibam, and therefore Shimon and Leah are free to go, Leah has no Chi of Yibam at all, has no requirement for Chalitza or Yibam because she's an Arias, she's the daughter of Shimon, but also the co-wife, Rachel, is also potter from Yibam and Chalitza. If Reuven happened to have two wives, Leah and Rachel, Leah is the daughter of Shimon, and Rachel is a complete stranger, and she's not one of the Arias with Shimon. Still, because when Reuven died, Shimon, the brother, is the father of Leah, and that's one of the Arias, and we say there's no Yibam or Chalitza there, so too it spills over and extends to Rachel as well, the other wife, even though Rachel technically it has no relationship bichlal, she's not family at all, no Arias to Shimon. We potter it legamrei, if the main wife, if one of the wives is one of the Arias to Shimon, then all the wives are potter. Tsarosehen, the co-wives, are also potter from Yibam Chalitza. That's step 3. Now comes this Mishnah that we're discussing now, which is going to be step 4. And the Mishnah says like this, V'chulan im mesu, if for some reason Leah, who was married to Reuven, and Reuven dies, but she's now the daughter of Shimon, so she should technically be pater from Yibam and Chalitza, and so too her co-wife, Racha, will also be pater from Yibam and Chalitza. So says the Mishnah, an exception. Im Mesu, if Leah dies before Reuven dies, oh, Mianu, or let's say Leah does a Mian to Reuven before Reuven dies. Oh, Nizgarshu, or for some reason Reuven and Leah got divorced before Reuven died. Oh, Shenimtsu Ayalonis, or Leah is found to be an Ayalonis, she's found to be someone who's not able to have children, and so the entire Mekach, the entire Kedushin between Reuven and Leah is null and void. So it comes out in all of these cases, when Reuven dies, Leah was never his true wife, either because Leah died before he died, or because she was Mema'in, she did a Mian to him, which we'll explain in a second, or they were divorced, or she was an Ayalonis, and the whole Kedushin was off. So in other words, Reuven died childless without his main wife, Leah, but he still has his other co-wife, Rachel. So says the Mishnah, in this case, although Shimon, his brother, is the father of Leah, and technically they're one of the Arias, but this that we say that the Arias paters Yibam, and therefore will also pater the Tzara, the co-wife, is only true that if at the time when Reuven died, Leah was still Reuven's wife. But now that Reuven divorced Leah, or Leah died before Reuven in all these cases, so Reuven is dying without Leah as his wife. So therefore, even though he was once married to Leah, who was the daughter of Shimon, his brother, and technically had he died first, before any of these things happened, she would have been pater from Yibam, and so too Rachel, the Tzara, the co-wife. Here, though, since Leah dies first, or is no longer the wife of Reuven, so now when Reuven dies, Shimon, his brother, is now mechuyev in Yibam to Rachel. Rachel no longer has the ptur Yibam. She is allowed to marry Shimon because she has an ability to do Yibam, in light of the fact that the wife Leah was not the wife of Reuven when Reuven died. That's step 4, that is this Mishnah. Now the Gemara, that's all background. The main point that we want is this halacha number 2, where the Mishnah said that if Leah does a Mion to Reuven, then there will be no, the marriage will dissolve, and Shimon the brother can now do Yibam with Rachel the co-wife. What does it mean that Leah does a Mian to Reuven? What does that mean? Mian, we said before in last recording, means to refuse a Derabbanan Kiddushin. What exactly is the case where Leah is refusing a Kiddushin, which she's allowed to do on a Derabbanan level, a Kiddushin Derabbanan, she's allowed to do Mian? What does that mean? What exactly is the circumstance? So this is where we're going to focus in on. It says the Gemara, Dekitcha Man, who was Mekadesh Leah, such that now she's able to do a Mian? Reuven is Mekudesh to Leah, and Leah is able to do a Mian. What is the case? Ilema Dekitcha Avia, if Leah was Mekudeshes to Reuven through her father was the one who was Mekabel Kesef Kedushin from Reuven, B'Mian Sagila? You can't just do a Mian. Mian Sagila, Mian meaning, can, is Mian sufficient? You can't just, Leah can't just simply say, I refuse to be married to Reuven now. Once the father accepts the Kesef Kedushin on her behalf from Reuven, Get Ma'alya Baye. Of course you need a full-fledged get. Get Ma'alya, full-fledged get, Baye, you need. You require a full-fledged get. So that can't be the case. What is the case of Mian? So El Olav, it must be, we're talking about a case where Dekacha Ihi Nafsha, that she was Mekadesh herself. If she was Mekadesh herself, which means that she must have been a Ktana, because the only ability to do a Derabbanan marriage is only with a Ktana where you don't have a father, and a mother or a brother or your or herself are able to do a Derabbanan Kedushin so that no one can chop her and treat her behefker. So we allow her to do a Kedushin Derabbanan. It must be that she's doing it herself. And that's why that she's able to do a Mian. But what do you see from here? V'katani debay Mian. But we see that even though she has a father, the Katana is the one who's performing the Kedushin Derabbanan with Reuven, seemingly without the consent of the father. She did it herself. And yet, she requires a Mian. So says the Gemara, Bishlam lefi Rav and Shmuel, I'm saying this out loud, Bishlam lefi Rav and Shmuel, who held that when a Ketana does a Kiddushin Shelo Das Aviha, without his consent, there is some legal significance, and therefore you need at least a Mian, so that we can read our Mishnah. But lefi Ula, who said that when a Ketana is Mekabel Kiddushin from a Chassan, from Reuven, without the consent of the father, it's a meaningless act, and there's not even a need for Mian. Why do you need Mian in this case? So we have a kasha now on Ula. We have this Mishnah that is technically discussing the ability for a tzara to be have a yibum with Shimon, even though Leah was one of the arayas. But because Leah was mema'in, she did a Mian to Reuven before Reuven died. Now that tzara is still able to now have Yibum with Shimon because Leah was no longer the wife of Reuven. Reuven died, even though she was one of the Arias to Shimon. She was the daughter of Shimon. But in context of this Mishnah, the Mishnah does imply that Leah did a Mian to Reuven. But if Leah is a Ketana and she's doing a Mian without her father's Rishus, it shows us that the Kiddushin has some legal standing. Kasha and Ula, who says that when a Ketana performs a Kiddushin without the Das of Avia, it has no legal standing in Halacha. This is the Kasha on Ula. So Rav Kahana gives the following answer. He makes an Okimta. Hu Mosivla, v'hu Mefarikla. Rav Kahana was the one who asked the Kasha. V'hu Mefarikla, he's also the one who's going to answer it. Kigain shenasa la maisa yisoma b'chai ha'av. This Mishnah speaks about a case where the Ketana was made into ki'ilu, an orphan, in the lifetime of her father. What does that mean? So we know in general that the rights of a father to Mekadesh his daughter and accept Kesef Kedushin on her behalf as a Ketana is only true as a Ketana or as a Naira. Once she becomes a bogeres, then he loses all rishus over her. Furthermore, once an isha does kiddushin and nisuin, once she actually goes through a full marriage, not just kiddushin, but also nisuin, then the father has lost all rights. Once she actually gets married to another man, then the father no longer has rishus over her, and the next marriage, he can't be mekadesh, he can't mekadesh her, he can't accept kesek kedushin for her, he is off limits. Once she actually goes through a marriage, a nisuin, the father no longer has rishus over her. So the Gemara is saying like this, that really in this, that there is a preliminary story to this Mishnah between Reuven and Leah. Reuven, again, is married to his niece Leah, and Reuven's brother Shimon is the father of Leah, and Leah, we're saying, was a ketana at the time, and she was doing mian to Reuven, and when Leah does mian to Reuven, now, because Reuven dies without Leah as his proper wife, Shimon is still able to do yibum to the other tsaras, to the other wives. That was the case of our Mishnah. The Gemara now is saying there was actually a preliminary story to that Mishnah. The truth is, Leah was previously married to another person, to another man. She did a full kiddushin and nisuin with another man, let's call him Levi. And she was married to Levi, and she had a full nisuin with Levi, and then, lo and behold, Levi either divorced her or Levi died. And then, afterwards, her second marriage was going to be to Reuven. And Reuven just did a kiddushin with her, and she did the kiddushin on her own as a ketana. And the Mishnah is saying that now she can do a mian. Now, this is not a kasha on Ula, because since in the first marriage, Leah was married to Levi and had a full nisuin with Levi, at that point already, the father no longer had any rishus over her. So therefore, the second time around, when she now is getting married to Reuven, the kiddushin that she's accepting upon herself from Reuven is totally allowed. She's allowed to accept the kesef kiddushin because Ula only said that it's a meaningless act for the ketana to accept the kesef kiddushin without the consent of her father if the father had rishus over her. But if the father doesn't have any rishus over her because she was already previously married, and once you're married as an nisuin, it's all over. There's no rishus of the father over anymore. Therefore, the second time she's getting married to Reuven, the kiddushin that he's giving her is able to be accepted by her, even though she's a ketana, even though her father is still alive, because her father no longer has any jurisdiction over her because she was already previously married to someone else as a full nesua, and he lost all rights to her. That's what the Mishnah means. The Gemara says, "Kegon shena sala maisa yisoma b'chayav." She's like a yisoma. She's like an orphan during the lifetime of her father, which is like a little bit of an irony. She's a yasom in the lifetime of her father in the sense that he no longer has rishus over her anymore. And therefore, there's no raya against Ula. Ula only said that when a ketana is under the jurisdiction of her father, she can't accept kesef kedushin without his consent. But in this case, in this Mishnah, we're making a very specialized okimta. We're talking about a case where Leah was already married beforehand. She was a full-fledged nesua to a different man beforehand, and the father lost all rights in her. Therefore, the subsequent marriage, the second marriage that she's having now with Reuven, the kiddushin that he gives her is able to be accepted by her. It's only derabanan, and therefore she can do a mian, she can do a refusal, but there's no raya whatsoever against Ula, because enachanami, there is a valid kesef kiddushin that is being accepted here. There is some legal significance here because the father doesn't have rishus over this girl anymore, and therefore we don't even need his consent. So that was kasha one, and that was answer number one. Now we move on to kasha number two, not from a Mishnah, but from a Braisa. And again, the Braisa is going to give us a roundabout case, not necessarily our agenda, but we'll learn a lot of things as we read this Mishnah, read this Braisa. But the main focus of this Braisa is, again, to target the specific assumption that a ketana can accept kiddushin during the lifetime of her father, even without his das, and it has some legal significance, which is akasha on Ula. So again, let's read the Mishnah, let's read the Braisa. Last word of the line is Masiv, second line from the bottom, Masiv Rav Amnuna. comes along Rav Nuna and asks Akasha again on Ulam. Ein mochra lekrovim. That's the Tanakama. Mishum Rabbi Yazar amru mochra lekrovim. So this is going to enter into the parsha of selling one's daughter as a slave, as an ama ivria, to another man. So the Torah allows, we know the Torah allows for a father, if he's, let's say, poor or impoverished, he's allowed to sell his daughter as an ama ivria, as a slave, to a man. And he, the other man, purchases this woman, this ketana, from this father, and now she serves him as a maidservant for a certain amount of time. Now, once the master, the Adon, buys this ketana, besides for her working for him, there's also a schus that the Adon has to either marry her himself, or for his son to marry this ketana that he just bought. So not only does she work for him, but he also has the rights to either marry her or give her over to his son. That halacha, that a son or the master is able to marry the ketana when they buy her as an ama ivria, is called yi'ud. It's called yi'ud. Yud ayin vav dalet. Yi'ud. It's a type of kiddushin, but it's kiddushin in the mizgaras, in the framework of ama ivria, of avdus. Okay, so that being said, the Gemara says as follows. What about, the Braisa says, what about selling, let's say a father wants to sell his ketana girl as an eved, as an am ivria, to a family member. And so the adon who's buying her is a member of the family who would technically not be able to marry her if he so chooses to, or his son would not be able to marry her, so they choose to, because they're one of their rias, let's say. Are you allowed, is a father allowed to sell his ketana as an ama ivria to a family member, to a relative, knowing full well that there's no capacity for any yud, for any kiddushin yud to take effect between the adon and this ketana? So let's say, says the Gemara, well, the Gemara is just going to quote it as krovim. So let's say, for example, a father wants to sell his daughter to his son. So his son obviously cannot marry his sister. So that would be a situation where he's being mocher lekrovim, and there's no capacity for yiyud. Says the Mishnah, says the Braisa, it's a machlokas. Tanakama holds ein mocher lekrovim. You're not allowed to sell your daughter as an ama ivria to a karov, because there's no capacity for yiyud. The master has to have an ability to marry the ketana that he buys as an ama ivria. If he doesn't have that capacity, you cannot sell your ketana as an ama ivria. Rashi points out that it's learned out from a pasuk, Imra b'enei adonai ashalo yada. The pasuk implies that there has to be a capacity for yud. However, Belazar says, Amru mocha lekrovim. Belazar argues and says, you are allowed to sell your ketana as an ama ivria, even though there's no capacity for yud. And he has his own pasuk. Rashi says, V'chi imkar ishes bito la'ama, that sometimes you are able to sell your daughter as an ama, just for shivcha, just for it to be in a shivcha, not for any yud capacity. Okay, that's the machlokas Tanakama Rabbi Elazar. That's not what we're focusing on. The next thing we're focusing on is really the end of this braisa, which is on Mem Hei Amud Aleph. The braisa continues, V'shavin shemokra almana lekohen gadol and grusha v'chalutz lekohen hadyut. Both the Tanakama and Rabbi Elazar agree, though, that a father is able to sell his daughter who is an almana, or his daughter who is a grusha, to a kohen gadol or to a kohen hadyut. Because although an almana is usher to a kohen gadol, and a grusha is a chalutza is usher to a kohen hadyut, it's a lav. It's one of the chayve lavim. And the halacha that we paskin like is that kiddushin is still tofes when it comes to chayve lavim. So even though it's usher for them to get married through yud, this ketana can't be married to a master who is a kohen gadol if she's an almana, because there won't be any yud. But lemaisa, since ikar hadin, the kiddushin will be tofes, it will work if they happen to go through with it, That's okay in terms of selling your katana. That's still called the capacity for yid. Even though it's true, it's a lav. It's a lav for the almana to do yid with the kohen gadol. But lemaisa, since technically speaking, if they were to have done it and violate that isr lav, the kiddushin will still be chal. So therefore, the father still has the right to sell his katana almana to a kohen gadol master, because there is a capacity for yi'ud, for kiddushin, in principle, even though it would violate a lav. But since the kiddushin is chal, that's still allowed and still within the framework of selling your katana to a master with the capacity for yi'ud. Everyone agrees to that. In other words, even the Tanakama, who holds that you can't sell your katana to a karov, because there, the one of the arayis, there is no kiddushin at all, he's still moda that he can sell a katana who's an almana to a kohen gadol, because although it's usur to marry a kohen gadol, but still, lemaisa, the kiddushin is still chal if it happens. That's the gemara. So now, that's the brisa. So now we're going to medayik. The brisa refers to a father selling his daughter, his katana, as an almana to a kohen gadol. Hi almana, this case of almana to a kohen gadol, the master is going to be the kohen gadol. Hechi dami, what is this case? Why are we referring to this ketana as almana? It sounds like she was married before and her husband died, and now she's a ketana and she's a almana, and now her father is selling her off as an ama ivria. So what's the case? How did she get married beforehand, and now such that now she's an almana? Ilema de katcha avia. If you want to tell me that the reason why she's an almana is because her father was once upon a time was mekabel kesef kedushin on her behalf, and then her husband died, that can't be. Because mi mati mazvila. Because if that's the case, is he really able to sell her as an ama ivria? The halacha is ha ein adam mocher es bito leshivchos acher ishus. A father is not allowed to sell his daughter as a shivcha after he already was mekabel kesef kedushin for her on her behalf. Once a father exercises his right to mekabel kesef kedushin for his daughter, for his daughter katana, then he's not able to now subsequently go ahead and sell her as a shivcha. You have to choose one or the other. You can't do both. Once you sell her into ishus, you can't now go ahead and sell her as a ketana ama ivria. Once you mekadesh her, you can't do shivchas afterwards. So says the Gemara, it can't be that this almana, ketana, was married off through kiddushin beforehand through her father. Because if that was the case, we would not have this brisa manifest. Because this brisa is telling us that her father took his daughter almana, his daughter who was an almana, and now he's selling her as an amivria, but that's impossible. Because if he was the one who was mekadesher before this sale, he's not able to sell his daughter if she was previously already mekudeshes to a man through the father, if the father was the one who was mekabel kesef kedushin. So elalav, it must be that that's not what happened. The reason why this girl is called an almana is because the kaddish ihi nafsha, she, the ketana, accepted kedushin from a chassan, and the chassan died, and that's why the kakari lay almana, and that's why we're calling her an almana. She was the one who accepted the kesef kedushin, and that's why we're calling her an almana. But what do you see from here? That a ketana is able to accept kesef kedushin without the consent of the father, and it has some meaning in halacha because we're referring to her as an almana. So according to Rav and Shmuel from before, who said that when a ketana is mekadesh, accepts kiddushin from a man without the das of her father, there is some legal standing, and therefore you need a get, you need a mian, there's something there. So we understand why we refer to her as an almana. She's taka, an almana, that needs, that there was some kind of ishus that took place, there was some kind of marriage that took place, that now we're calling her an almana. But according to Ula, who says that when a ketana accepts kedushin without the consent of the father, it's a meaningless act, there is nothing that took place, it's a zilch in halacha, then why in the world are we calling her an almana? She was never even mikudeshes to this man before her father sold her to this adon. So it's a kasha on ula because linguistically, the braisa implies that a katana is able to accept kesef kedushin from someone, and it has some legal help standing because look, we're calling her an almana. So again, the Gemara makes an okimta to answer up for ula, and this will end. But again, it's a little bit of a complicated okimta that needs a little bit of a background. So hold cup. Here we go. Amar Rav Amram, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Hacha b'kedushe yiud, ve'aliba de Rav Yosi bar Rav Yehuda, de Amar ma'os harishonos lav l'kedushin nisnu. Let's explain, and then we'll read it back inside. Rav Amram, Amar Rav Yitzchak says the following. The first marriage that this woman had was not your typical marriage between Leah, this Ketana, and we'll call him Reuven. That's what we were assuming before, that she accepted Kedushin. No. Really, what happened was as follows. Stage one was that this Ketana, this Leah, was sold by her father to a master, to an Adon, and the Adon exercised his right to actually marry this Ketana, his Ama Ivria, his Shivcha, as a wife. He accepted, he wanted to marry her, and he's allowed to. That's called Kedusha Yiyud, like we said. Now, he did Kedusha Yiyud, and he died. And that's what makes her into an Almana, because there was Kedusha Yiyud. And that's what makes her into Almana. And now the father is stage two, subsequently selling her again to another Adon, and that's why she's called an Almana, to a Kohen Gadol. Now, let's focus in on each one of these stages and explain how we're answering the question. First of all, we're saying that in stage one, there was a Kiddushe Yud. There are two ways for how Kiddushe Yud operates, and this is very important right now. When the Adon gives money to the father to buy his daughter as a Ketana, as an Ama Ivria, and later on he decides he wants to marry this Ketana Ama Ivria, there are two ways of understanding where the Kesef Kedushin is coming from. One way of understanding it is that the Ma'os, the original Ma'os that the master used to purchase this Ketana, retroactively become the Kesef Kedushin that is being used to marry this Ketana. And if that's the case, then the truth is the father is the one who's getting the Kesef Kedushin and accepting it on the behalf of the daughter that he just sold. The actual Ma'os that went to the purchase is being given to the father. He's giving over the Ketana to this Adon. The Adon later on decides he wants to marry her. And that original Ma'os, those original Ma'os, Kedushin, are being serving as Kesef Kedushin, which went to the father. So the father was the one who actually married her off. Now that, says the Gemara, cannot be our case in stage one. Because if that's Taka how it happened, through Kedusha Yiyu, that the original Ma'os were viewed as the Kedushin, that means the father was the one who accepted the Kedushin. In which case, our Mishnah, our Braisa, would never manifest, because once a father, like we said before, does Kedushin for his daughter, then he won't be able to ever sell his daughter as an Amma later on. So how can we say our Braisa is talking about a case where Kedusha Yud was done originally, and it was done with the Ma'os that was given by the Adon originally to the father, and then later on, our Braisa starts off by saying that you can sell an Almana. This Almana, who came from the original Kedusha Yud, is going to a Kohen Gadol, being sold to a Kohen Gadol. That can't be the case. That can't be the understanding, because then the father would not have the right to sell his daughter a second time after that Kedusha Yud. So therefore, the Gemara is saying that really we're not working with that Shita. We're working with Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda. Who is Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda? What does he hold? That the way Kedusha Yud works is that when the Adon gives the money to the father to buy his daughter, that money is money that was done for the purchase, and that's it. If later on the Adon decides he wants to marry his Ama Ivria, this Ketana that he bought, so the way it works is he is basically knocking off the years of servitude, of work that she has to work for him, and he's basically telling her, "I'm giving it. I'm detracting that from your responsibilities. You no longer have to work for me for X amount of years." And the hana that she gets from now being putter from working, the schar pu'ula that she now is putter from having to work for the next X amount of years, is the hana that is used as the kesef kedushin that she is receiving. And so if that's the case, that means that the daughter is the one who, through kedusha yud, is the actual one who's accepting the kesef kedushin. So now that we have that, now let's explain the answer. So the Gemara is saying like this. This almana that we're calling an almana, that this father is now selling to a Kohen Gadol, the reason why she's called an almana is because she underwent a previous Kiddushei Yiud. She was first stage one sold by her father to a random Adon, a random master. And that master decided to marry and Mekadesh this Am Ivriya that he bought. And now we're working with Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Huda, who holds that the way Kiddushei Yiud works is that really he's pottering her from any future work, and that's the hana of Kesef Kiddushin that she's getting right now. She's the one who's accepting the Kesef Kiddushin. Okay? And now he dies. The master dies. So now the father still has the right to sell his daughter a second time, because he was never the one who actually did the Kiddushin for her the first time. It was through the Adon himself. She was the one who accepted the Kiddushin through the Hana. So now we can now be speaking about stage two, where the father now wants to subsequently sell her a second time, which he's allowed to do. This is not called Shivchus Acher Kiddushin, Acher Ishus, because he was never the one who accepted the Kiddushin from the Adon. It was coming from the daughter herself when she got pottered up from any work. And now the father is selling her a second time. And now she's called an almana to a Kohen Gadol. She's called that she was an almana. Why is she an almana? Because the first Adon was Nifter. The first Adon was Nifter. Now, since the first Adon was Nifter, that's why she's called an almana to Kohen Gadol. But this is not a kasha on Ula. Let's go back to Ula. This is not a kasha on Ula, because Ula was only talking about a case where a father had rishus over his daughter, and if the daughter accepts Kesef Kedushin without his consent, it's a meaningless act. But here, the Kedushei Yiud that took place earlier was with full consent. Because when the father sold his daughter to the first Adon, that was with the understanding that the Adon may marry her. So he is giving his full consent. And therefore, when the Adon later on decides to marry the Kitana, the Ama Ivriya, and he does Kiddushei Yiud, and she's the one who's accepting the Kiddushei Yiud, the Kesef Kiddushin, by knocking off the Schar Pa'ula. So now, it's with the consent of the father, and that was never the Kasha on Ula. Ula was only talking about a case where the daughter, the Kitana, is doing it without the consent of the father. But since we're discussing Kiddushei Yiud, it is with the consent of the father, and that's why she's called an almana. That's why it has legal standing, the Kiddushin that took place, because the Kiddushei Yiud is done with the consent of the father, because he knows full well that the Adon has the capacity to marry her if he so chooses. And so let's read that back inside. Says the Gemara, Amar of Amar Yitzchak Hacha b'Kiddushei Yiud. We're discussing a case of Kiddushei Yiud, where this Kitana was a Kiddushei Yiud beforehand, and that's why she's called an Almana afterwards, because the Kiddushin did take effect through Yiud, and the Kiddushin was done with the consent of the father, because the father was the one who sold her into this situation, and knowing full well that the Adon couldn't marry her. And therefore, when the Adon dies, it's called an Almana, because this was a valid Kiddushin. But we have to be in the world of Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda, who holds the Amar Maos Harishonos Lav LeKiddushin Nisnu, that the Maos Harishonos, the first amount of money, the Maos Harishonos, the original money that the Adon gave the father to purchase the Kitana, is not what's being used for Kesef Kiddushin, but rather, like we said, it's the fact that the Adon is knocking off future work and future amount of years that she has to work for him, and that's the hana that she's receiving, that's the kedushin that she's receiving, and therefore it's a kedushin that is being done by her, and therefore we can be talking about a case where now the father can subsequently sell her a second time, because this would not be a sale after kedushin, of his own kedushin. Okay, these are the two kashas on Ula and the deflections. A little bit complicated, a lot of details, a lot of background. Do it again, chazer it again with Rashi. Feel free to call me or text me with any questions, and we can go through it again. Hatzlocha.